Welcome back to Spin Now with me, Katie. And it is my favorite time of the week where I introduce this week's special guest. And I have to say, I am a little bit giddy. I'm a little bit hyper because I'm a big fan of the next person I'm going to introduce. It is only Mr. John Gibbons. John, how are you?
I'm great, Katie. Delighted to be here. I am also a fan of yours. So delighted.
Thanks so much. John, we just heard your track, Your Love. That featured in a worldwide popular series, Pretty Little Liars. And I'm so intrigued to know, how did that come about?
Well, at the time, I had no idea because I had just recently been signed. And that was kind of my first single under the new deal with Good Soldier Records in the UK. And I had no clue about the inner workings of the industry. And I was just told one day by somebody who had seen it on the show, well, your song was on Pretty Little Liars. And I thought, what? So anyway, it turns out that there's a whole world of syncing with music, and record labels submit songs to be synced to various different things, whether it's ads, TV shows, other bits and pieces. And Your Love had been selected by whoever was in charge of syncing for Pretty Little Liars. And the exposure that gave the song, and then by extension me, was huge. It really felt like that was kind of a nexus moment for me. You know, it was the start of something big and a move to a different place. And it was just down to the label being really proactive and wanting to push the song. It was great.
Yeah, it was insane. I can remember hearing it and being like, wow, here we go. You know, it really does shoot you into where you want to go, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's funny because while Your Love wasn't the biggest hit for me ever, it was the biggest I had had at that time. And it just brought me to a different place and kind of gave me the platform that I needed then to progress after that. And it's still one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah, mine for sure. I was coming in the car a while ago and I was listening to all of your songs, that being one of it. John, can you share the story behind your journey into the world of DJing and producing music?
Yeah, I can. Like, there's a kind of a couple of different steps to it. Like, I started DJing in school and it was almost by default or by accident even. I was on a student representative council and one of our tasks was to organize like fundraisers, discos, table quiz, all that kind of stuff. And we had a school disco coming up and the DJ let us down a couple of days in advance and we couldn't get anybody else. We'd no real budgets or anything. Plus, we probably didn't know what we were doing. So in my naivety, I said, right, well, I have a big music collection of lots of dance music as well. How hard can it be? And I decided to DJ. Now, I didn't know the first thing about it, Katie. I didn't know how to mix tracks. I didn't even know you could mix tracks. I just knew what I liked. So anyway, gave it a go and was probably terrible, but had the best time of my life. And I can remember it distinctly to this day, just looking out at like 300 or 400 of my schoolmates and watching them interact to what with what I was doing. And I'd been in bands before and I'd done a lot of on-stage drama and stuff, but this was just a different buzz for me completely. And the bug bit, and I started doing 21sts, shadowing other DJs, you know, doing 21st weddings, graduated onto bars when I was too young to be in bars. And it just became an obsession for me, you know, like I dropped the band side of things and all of that. It just became about DJing. And I was doing commercial gigs for years and years. And it was, you know, paid my way through college. And I said after college, I would give it 2 years as a business just to see, like it was already set up as a business. Just to see how things would go. And I'm still doing it. So there were a couple of different incarnations. You know, I gradually phased out the commercial side of things and started to focus on dance music. And that's where the production came in. I realized very quickly it was necessary to produce as well for profile reasons. I was never really attracted to the electronic side of production. I was more into kind of songwriting and singing from the bands, you know. But I realized I had to do it. So I learned very, very slowly. I wasn't a natural at the start at all. The technology, even though I would be technologically minded, it just seemed so big and so intimidating. And it wasn't accessible then as it is maybe now. The last kind of 10 years have really opened up production. It's much cheaper to get into it. You know, the technology has just advanced and is more accessible. So I just kept going. I just kept plugging away. And I was so bad at the start. It was demoralizing. But eventually it clicked. And because I'd kind of gone the road less traveled, as I tend to do, I was learning lots of different styles. I was always into pop music. I was always into lots of different styles of music. So I was determined that I wanted to be able to produce those too, just for myself. So it wasn't just about dance music. And that's really stood to me now because the music that I make, I mean, under some of the aliases, I do a lot of underground stuff, but under my own name, it's a more commercial style of dance music. And I don't think I would have been able to do that without the kind of journey that got me to where I am.
For sure. And you know, I love what you just said there, that at the start you felt like you were so bad at it and it was so hard, because there's someone listening in now that dreams to be where you are, and you're after letting them know that it's not easy, you are going to fail, but you just kept getting back up, finding, you know, where it worked for you, and look where you are now.
Absolutely. And look, I still fail every day. I still get imposter syndrome. I still listen to somebody else's track. Someone like, say, Calvin Harris, who is a production genius, and he is. He does it all from start to finish, like in an afternoon type thing. But he is the exception to the rule. It's not the easiest thing in the world. Like anything, you have to put in the hours, you have to practice. If you want to become a professional sports star, you have to put in those hours and practice. Those that are willing to do it are the ones that rise to the top. And even the so-called overnight successes, people who just seem to appear out of nowhere, I can guarantee you they've been putting in years and years of work and practice and sweat and blood and the whole lot in behind the scenes. And a lot of it is just down to persistence. You know, I mean, you will reach a standard where it can become very frustrating because you see others breaking through and maybe you're not. But if you just stay persistent, and I would say always have a plan B as well, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, but we're all into different things. So have a plan B, have something there. So maybe the no's or the rejections you won't take as hard if you know that you just don't have all your eggs in one basket. I mean, some people might disagree with that advice, but that's the way I was. It's why I, you know, finished college, even though DJing had taken off for me kind of at that stage. It was just to have something there in the background that gave me that little bit of peace of mind that if there was a risk to take, I could just jump in and take it, knowing there was something else for me if push came to shove.
I love that. I love that you mentioned imposter syndrome, because that is real. You know, I'm on radio. I've plugged in the background for a couple of years, and it was real for me for a year or so, feeling like you shouldn't be there looking at other people. So I love that you said that. You've collaborated with various artists. What do you look for in a collaboration, John?
I wouldn't say I specifically look for something going in. The big thing for me when I'm producing and when I'm DJing as well, music in general, is how do I feel about something as opposed to what do I think about something? And while that might sound a little bit kind of out there and esoteric, I think we all feel something from music. It's about eliciting some sort of reaction in the listener. Could be positive, could be negative, could make you sad, happy, whatever it is. But I think the worst thing in music is if you're apathetic about it. If I, as a producer, have produced a piece of music that people are apathetic about, I haven't done my job. If they hate it, I probably have. Equally, if they love it, I probably have too. So when it comes to collaborations, there are industry influences which kind of dictate that, oh, you look for somebody who's got a bigger profile than you, et cetera, et cetera. That's not how I approach it personally, even though sometimes the labels will push in that direction, which is great too. I just generally, I get a lot of top lines and a lot of lyrical ideas sent to me by singers all the time. And it literally is a case of I listen to something and it makes me sit up and think, wow, what's that? That's different. I really like it for whatever reason it might be. It tugs on a heartstring, or it makes me angry, or, you know, whatever it might be. And then I think, right, well, can I do a job with this? And that's how I approach the stuff that gets sent to me. But then quite often I'll have an instrumental, or I'll have a full track written by myself, and I'm not going to put myself on the final vocal. And at that point, it's a little bit more clinical in terms of looking for a singer. That's kind of when the label might come in and they'll try and play somebody who will suit that particular lyric, or will suit that style of track or whatever it is, or if they have a bigger profile. So it depends on what order you're doing things, and I mix up the order. So generally, if the top lines are sent to me, it's just how does it make me feel? And the other way around, quite often it can be label considerations.
Well, speaking of the label, that was my next question. In 2020, you opened Blindsided Records. I work closely every week with them. What made you go down this road?
A couple of reasons. Decided to go. Well, number one, it was kind of, I had run a label in the past, a trance label called Club Educate, which had done quite well. And, it had a lot of music from Ireland in there and provided a platform for Irish trance artists. Because I remember when I was kind of coming through and starting to produce, I would have loved if there was an Irish platform for me. It was quite difficult to get tracks signed. I mean, it still is, but it was really difficult to get tracks signed back then. And I just thought, if only there was someone in Ireland who could relate to me as an Irish guy, you know, coming through or whatever. And I thought, someday down the line, I'd like to provide, if I was in a position to do so, provide that kind of platform for other Irish producers and artists. And then I was doing a lot of tracks as well that weren't maybe suitable for my own project, you know. But I still wanted to get the music out there. And I thought, well, let's put those tracks out on my own label. I know how to do it. And allied with that, then that will give a potential platform for other Irish artists that doesn't currently exist. And when I say it doesn't currently exist, there are lots of Irish labels, but this was the more kind of mainstream side of dance music. There wasn't a lot of that kind of coming through or breaking through from Ireland at the time. And then COVID struck. We'd only kind of two or three tracks released. And the idea was maybe to release six or eight tracks a year. But COVID struck and suddenly I had all this extra time, which I was devoting to the studio because I wasn't out on the road anymore. And I thought, well, I have the time to devote now to the label as well. And demos were starting to come in because there was just suddenly a flood of production during COVID. Everyone was sitting in their bedrooms. They weren't going out. Mm-hmm. Lots of people tried their hand at production for the first time who were into dance music. And all these really cool productions were just suddenly landing on my desk. And I said, right, let's put them out. Let's really double down on this label idea. And myself and my management team just started doing it. And it kind of went from there. And it really has provided, a platform now for up and coming artists who in some cases will go on to the next level. I mean, I look at one of our first releases on Blindsided. It was a track by Robbie G, who obviously is one half of Belters Only. So, you know, it can lead on to wherever the artist wants to take it themselves. And we've just had so many artists do so many good things, both on the label and after the fact, if they've moved on to other labels or into different regions or whatever it is. And we're now at the stage where it's not just Irish artists. I mean, more than half our output is international now as well. And we've become quite well established as a breeding ground for new talent. And increasingly, you know, as the label gets bigger and bigger, home for more established artists, which is really cool. Like, it's become much more in a short space of time than I ever had envisaged.
Well, John, that's what we love about you, because you have grown step by step and then you like to take people along with you, and it's the best way to be. John, we're going to take a short break, but before we do, I'm going to play out one of my favorite tracks. This track received an insane response, Would I Lie to You? Tell me a little bit about, did you anticipate how big this would blow up when it did?
No, is the short answer, because I had never really anticipated me being in the position that Would I Lie to You put me in. Do you know what I mean? Like for a track to get multiple platinum status and break through internationally and all this kind of thing. I just had never really seen that. Your Love had been the biggest to date. And it was just so huge. Finally, the track played on radio stations outside of Ireland and ubiquitously in Ireland. And that was huge. But Would I Lie to You just reached a whole new audience. You know, it did well in country after country. It just opened up my profile in terms of gigs to everywhere. Suddenly I was signed to, you know, one of the major live agencies in the world, which was unbelievable. I was doing gigs and festivals I'd never imagined before. I mean, I had hoped and I tried to picture and visualize this, but no, making Would I Lie to You, and I can distinctly remember it. It was just one day having fun in the studio, playing around with an idea, a song from childhood. And I thought, right, this is going to work for me. The label loved it. And I was still just learning the way kind of the business behind the scenes worked. And Good Soldier were really great when I was signed with them, because they would let me see under the bonnet and under the hood. And they would let me explore the business side of it as well. That helped subsequently with Blindsided. And I could just see what was going on and how it would happen and why it would happen. And I just didn't know that world was so big. I suspected it was, but to see it happen firsthand and to happen with one of my tracks and watch it grow and build was just unbelievable. So no, making that track in the studio, I didn't know the world that would open up to me. It was just incredible.
I love it. I'm obsessed. Sit tight. When we get back, I have some more questions for Mr. John Gibbons. But for now, it is Would I Lie to You? On Spin Now. Welcome back to Spin Now with me, Katie. You just heard Would I Lie to You from John Gibbons, and he still joins me. John, I have a few more questions and I'm going to let you pop off. I'm so grateful for you giving me your time this morning. Can you share a memorable moment or a fan encounter that has stuck with you?
Yeah, I can. It's kind of a collective fan encounter, and it was something that just blew my mind again. It was one of those pinch me moments. I was playing at a festival called Technogeist in Mexico, in San Luis, kind of in central Mexico. I'd never been to Mexico before. And I didn't know the extent of this festival. When I got there, it was a whole town square had been taken over to, and they'd created kind of an amphitheater with seats up around the sides. And like it was 50,000 people in one place with one stage and part of a week-long music festival that happens there every year. And I thought, like, nobody's going to know me here. I'm in Mexico. I've had one or two tracks that have done well, but to my knowledge, nothing had done anything in Mexico or Central America or South America or anything like that. And there were some much bigger DJs on both before and after me. And I remember walking out on stage and thinking, oh my God, again, imposter syndrome. Like, yeah, this is brilliant, but what's the reaction going to be like to me? And it was so funny. There were kind of a row in front of me, a row of people in front of me, and they had like blonde wigs and glasses on. And they started throwing these flowers on the stage, which it turned out like that was just something that was done over there. But, you know, I was thinking of Tom Jones, you know, and the ladies throwing brasses, so these people throwing flowers at me. And the crowd went wild and my set went amazingly well. And it was just such a moment for me because I almost feared going out on that stage. I thought, what's the reaction going to be like? I'm one of the smaller artists here, but they knew me. And I just thought, right, something's happening here. Something is going on that's bigger than I could have imagined. And I just always remember that moment. You know, it's just a really big one for me.
I love that. Absolutely love that. Can I ask, can you remember what the first ever album you purchased?
Can actually. Yeah, it was going way back. And I remember having to save pocket money for it. It was Technotronic Trip on This. Before I really knew what remixes were, I knew Pump Up the Jam very well. I'd heard that for years. And love along it. With tracks like Snap, Rhythm as a Dancer, they were kind of, that was the music that got me into dance music. And, you know, I was too young to go clubbing or anything like that. I was never really a clubber, strangely, anyway. But I bought that album and I remember it was like £2 or £3 dearer than the other ones because it was an import. And, you know, there was a physical CD. And having to save up longer, and it just blew my mind because I knew some of the original versions of the tracks on the album, but these were remixes. And I thought, what's this all about? And again, just looking back now with hindsight, that was probably a little moment on the journey towards DJing. I wasn't a DJ or anything at the time, but I just became aware of a remix. You could do different things with songs and it was okay to do that. And it was even encouraged. And I still have that CD sitting there. It's kind of like I've one or two little things, mementos from the journey, if you like, that I've hung on to. And that's one of them because it was the first one I ever bought. And I remember the first single I ever bought was Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby.
Yes.
Either to my internal credit or detriment, I don't know. But I just still love that track.
Well, look, since we're on the songs, okay, give me your guilty pleasure, something no one knows, that guilty pleasure song, right? Because my first album, okay, John, was the Backstreet Boys, but my taste in music is wide now. It's like yourself. Mm-hmm. I love all genres. What's that one song you go to that you wouldn't be telling the public about that's your guilty pleasure?
Well, I'm about to tell the public, aren't I? it's probably Lionel Richie's Stuck on You.
Oh, I love it.
It's either that or Cutting Crew, Died in Your Arms. I am a sucker. I listened to the music my parents were listening to when I was growing up. And I'm a sucker for like 80s power ballads and stuff.
Love them.
I just love, like, Def Leppard would be one of my favorite bands. My dad was big into Def Leppard, you know. But it's the ballads that I like. It's the love songs, the ones that tug on the heartstrings. So they're probably the guilty pleasures. And again, growing up an artist, that now it's kind of well known now at this stage because I covered one of his tracks, but Christa Berg, I'm still a huge fan of. I know it's not the coolest thing in the world to say, but I just think he's a brilliant songwriter and I love the stories he tells. So I have loads of guilty pleasures, but they're ones that stand out.
I love them. John, if you were not in the position you are now, we talked about backups earlier in the interview. What would you have done? What path would you have took?
The path I was on was law, believe it or not. And the plan was to do the bar exam once I finished my degree and become a barrister. Now, I didn't do the bar exam because, as I told you, I said I'd give it 2 years and here I am still doing it. But yeah, that was the path I had chosen and the road I wanted to go down. So different to what I do now. But look, here I am. Life has a funny way of taking us where we don't expect.
And that is for sure. Do you have any, you know, pre-gig rituals or suspicions before you kick off?
Yeah, I visualize always. Even if I'm in the venue waiting to go on, I will always just kind of like, I'm big into visualization and, you know, manifestation. I believe we kind of create our own worlds. So I will always just take, even if it can sometimes be 10 seconds, or if I'm in a dressing room, I might be able to get a couple of minutes. Just close the eyes. It's easy behind the glasses if you're side of stage, no one knows. And just visualize whatever it is I want to see when I'm standing on that stage. So let's say a crowd is still coming in. It's the full crowd. Let's say it's a festival and the crowd's already in there and it's, you know, they're waiting. It's the reaction that I will get to certain tracks, particularly if I'm testing a new track. I'll visualize the reaction to that new track. And it's amazing how often that actually comes about. You know, I believe it works for me. And it's something that, like, I'll still get butterflies and nerves, healthy ones. Like, I enjoy it before a gig, and it just kind of settles me and puts me in my place, ready to go on stage. And I do it every single time, no matter what kind of gig it is.
I love it. You're literally manifesting. You're manifesting.
Yeah, I think we all are, whether we realize it or not. If you can control that subconscious a little bit, I think you'll then be in control of your so-called destiny. But even if we're not aware of it, the subconscious is deciding what's going to go on. So just feed it with positive stuff as opposed to negative.
Love it. Outside of music, John, what are some of your hobbies or interests that people don't know about you?
Well, I'm big into sport. Always was growing up. Tennis was my big sport. You know, not the most played sport in Ireland, but I played that competitively for years and years and years. Haven't played in a while now, but absolutely loved it and still love it. Like, follow tennis. Soccer as well. Pretty much all sports growing up. I was just always outside playing sport. I have an interest, boring as it sounds, in the law, believe it or not. as a result of the background, a lot of family members involved in that too. But my interest in the law extends to kind of trying to find where the law could be fixed or amended, or finding loopholes in it, or how that could be exploited. So probably I would have ended up being a defense barrister more than anything. I see it as kind of a puzzle, because like everything, there are 100 ways to skin a cat, you know, and it's the same with the law. And it becomes quite interesting to me. Like, I'll read about a case and think, but what if they did this or what if they did that, and then examine the law. And it is essentially a different language, legalese. And that's another kind of interest of mine, languages. I really enjoy languages and always have from a young age.
You love a bit of research.
I love a bit of research, provided it's something that I want to research. If I don't have an interest in something, I just don't want to know about it. And that's why a lot of school was quite boring. And I was always looking to the extracurricular stuff or the more creative end of things, like anything I could get involved in school, whether it was drama or sport or whatever, that involved not sitting in a classroom, I was all over it. So
I could not
kind of
agree
carried
more.
On throughout life.
Yeah, that I've spoken about this so many times on the show before, about education and how there is kids out there that, you know, aren't built for the academic side, and they only hone in to, you know, what really interests them. And imagine feeding those children with the tools they need to go forward with what they're passionate about. Imagine the type of world we would then live in, you know.
It would be so different. Like, this one size fits all approach to education, while I understand, you know, things have to be managed, it just doesn't work. And I think increasingly doesn't work for so many people, because we have, particularly in Ireland, like, we've such a wide and diverse range of individuals now. And we're encouraged in a way people weren't in the past to be ourselves and to be individuals. And it's just a complete melting pot of different people sitting in one classroom, all been told to do the one thing in the one way. How can that work? It'll work for some people, but I think for the majority, it doesn't. And I don't know what the solution is, but it is a problem.
Oh, for sure. John, that is a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
For sure. John, we are nearly done. I could talk to you all day. We're going to chat a little bit about your latest track, Lie to Me. Tell me where you drew the inspo for this one. You know, it is just such an infectious one.
Yeah, I wanted to do something a little bit more upbeat and, in a sense, tie back to the faster roots that I had in dance music, you know, when I was playing a lot of trance, when I was breaking through. And the climate is right. I've wanted to do that for a long time, but the climate is kind of right now. Things have sped up over the past few years in dance music, particularly the last year. And then I, you know, I just drew on one or two kind of during COVID and post COVID bits and pieces that had gone on in my life. And like the lyrics are quite simplistic, but I think they're relatable to everybody. It's just about removing yourself from a situation that's maybe toxic or not beneficial to you, that you knew for a while wasn't beneficial, but you persisted with, and finally making that break, you know, taking a break from it. And, you know, that's where the lyric then "Lie to Me" comes in. And I suppose if you want to look at it that way, for me, it just felt a little bit empowering, and was reflective of one or two experiences in my life over the past few years. So that's where the lyric came in. And I just wanted to be energetic, bright, upbeat, pacey, and kind of happy. And it's going down really well so far.
I think it's going down really well because, John, it's relatable. That's the word you're looking for. Relatable. Everyone has went through what you are singing, you know?
Yeah, and we do go through so many. The details are different, but so many of our life stories are quite similar in with regard to the big experiences. I'm just glad that people can relate to it. And, you know, it kind of helps me as well when people say something like that, or, oh, I really like this lyric or that lyric. It just tells me that I'm not the only one going through stuff too. We all do. And we all have shared experiences, albeit the details are different. So, you know, there's a camaraderie in that too. And look, there's music again, bringing people together.
For sure. I could not agree more. John, that is it. And honestly, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on Spin Now. All that's left to do is to give you the floor to introduce your brand new track on Spin Southwest.
I'm John Gibbons, and this is my brand new track, Lie to Me, with Katie Sheehan on Spin Southwest.